This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. The animated movie Chicken Run has just been released on video and DVD. It's a satire of prisoner of war movies like The Great Escape and Stalag 17, but the prisoners are chickens, and the prison camp is a barbed wire British egg farm. We're going to hear from the two animators who co-created and co-directed the film. Nick Park is a three-time Academy Award winner who's best known for his short animated film starring the characters of Wallace and Gromit. Peter Lord is the co-founder and chairman of the Aardman Studio in England, which specializes in clay animation. Park has worked with Lord at Aardman since 1985. When Chicken Run begins, the chickens are feeling defeated because their attempts at escape have all been foiled. But the heroine of the movie, a hen named Ginger, refuses to give up. She puts her faith in a free-spirited American rooster named Rocky, who is accidentally wound up at the farm. Escaping becomes a necessity when the mean-spirited woman who owns the egg farm decides it would be more lucrative if, instead of selling eggs, she made chicken pot pies. So she gets a diabolical-looking pie machine and explains her plan to her nasty but dim-witted husband.
Ooh, that's champion, that is. What is it?
It's a pie machine, you idiot. Chickens go in, pies come out.
Ooh, what kind of pies?
Apple.
My favourite.
Chicken pies, you great lummox. Imagine it. In less than a fortnight, every grocer's in the county will be stocked with box upon box of Mrs. Tweedy's homemade chicken pies.
Just Mrs.?
Woman's touch makes the public feel more comfortable.
Oh, right. How does it work?
Get me a chicken and I'll show you.
Last June, when Chicken Run was released theatrically, I asked Nick Park and Peter Lord if they did any research on chicken farms.
We did. We were going to spend, you know, 3 months living with chickens to, you know, to really do it right. But
this is the method approach to understanding chickens.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Yeah. And we actually ended up spending a day on a chicken farm. And we took a video camera with us and really got down on our knees with the chickens just to see what life is like from a chicken's point of view.
What did you notice that surprised you when you got down to a chicken eye level?
Gosh, I mean...
Well, I just, they twitched a lot. The thing about chickens, which we hadn't reckoned on, is that their heads twitch fiercely and convulsively the whole time. You know, and because their eyes are on the other side of their head, they're constantly moving their head around to see things. And we very rapidly reckoned this would make for a terrible movie because you couldn't have a tender love scene because the two protagonists, would instead of looking into each other's eyes, would be twitching their heads the whole time. You know, to look out first one eye, then the other.
Mm. Yeah, in fact, we threw out, you know, what everybody knows as a chicken design quite early on in the film. So we had the knees bending the right way and, you know, we gave them hands instead of wings. And, you know, generally improved, you know, what we know as a chicken.
Yeah.
Well, tell us what you did model the chickens on. The bodies, the heads, the eyes, mouth.
Well, you know, our chickens are such a daft group of characters that we wanted a lot of comedy out of them. And, you know, like the Wallace and Gromit films, we gave them big, wide mouths with lots of teeth and eyes that are touching in the middle. And it gives them a very funny kind of, you know, goofy and often deadpan look, which we play off a lot in the movie. And their bodies, we wanted to get a lot of mileage out of them being this group of very unathletic, you know, unheroic group that have never really done anything or questioned anything in their lives, and pulling off this enormous stunt.
Let's talk about facial expressions, because I think that's the most communicative part of a body and probably a very difficult thing to put across in the kind of animation that you do, but you both do it so well. Maybe you could describe a little bit how you would express an emotion in clay animation, like confusion. You know, take one of the chickens that had to be confused at some point.
If you were to see the whole head of Rocky, it's only 2 inches high. And the space above his eyeball, and that space is, I don't know what, you know, a couple of millimetres. But, and it's with that tiny space that we play, and you can obviously make the brow frown by bringing it down in the middle. You can make a quizzical look by raising one side and lowering the other. And you can then make the eyes suddenly, sort of, as it were, pop out of the head, suddenly get very wide. So you're playing with this brow, which acts like eyebrows, the eyeballs and the eyelids, and you can use lids to blink in different ways and indicate, you know, I don't know, complacency and make the eyes smile. But you're talking about a tiny little canvas. And really, if you do as we've often done, you watch watch actors, watch a live-action movie and turn down the sound and see how the face acts. And it's frighteningly minimalist, you know. But it's those little signals that real people can give off very easily because they're real. We're trying to give those same signals in our puppets.
So you do this a lot. You watch movies with the sound off and just study the face.
Well, for this film, to try and get these expressions we've talked about, in practice, we talked to the animators at huge length about what we wanted and about the motivation for this scene. And often, especially at the start of the shoot, Nick or I would end up rehearsing a gesture 30 times, just over and over again, to try and sort of somehow communicate it to the animator. And after a while, we thought, well, this is a mug's game. This is really slow. So we started to record ourselves on video. So that would be us with the sound down. We'd look at our own faces, mute, and see, you know, yes, how you talk about bewilderment. How does bewilderment show on the face? What are the brows doing? How wide are the eyes? How are the eyeballs shifting around? Because that's another great indicator. It's where the focus of the eyes is really crucial. Are they focused right on the person you're talking to? Are they drifting around the room looking at other details? You know, all this kind of thing.
You know, one of the things I really like about your animations is that let me just explain. You're working on this teeny tiny little set. You've got the clay figures that you're moving around in these small increments. And in the set with them, you have a mix of like little miniature objects you've designed, like little miniature like chairs and houses and beds and things like that. But there's also a few real things. Like, for instance, there's a scene where a chicken is trying to tunnel out of the chicken farm with a spoon. And I suspect that the spoon is real because it certainly looks real. And so you have this mix of something that is absolutely real and something that's absolutely fantasy inhabiting the same reality at the same time. And it makes for very interesting viewing.
That's what we always find interesting about it, really.
That juxtaposition of the real and the imaginary?
In the same
reality.
Yeah, because that's right. I mean, we are, what the world we've created is a strange sort of twilight world between kind of real live-action movie making, because you've got a 3D set, but in miniature. You can light it, do camera work, just as in any live-action action picture. At the same time, the characters, because they're made of clay, they can change shape and they can be very cartoony. And, you know, so we're always just travelling this very thin line between how real, how gritty, and how smooth and how soft is this world.
Because there's a huge difference as well, really fundamentally, between that room you've described. The bunk is made of wood, and you can see the texture of the wood. The bed has got straw in it, and you can see the texture of the straw. There's a piece of rusty old iron, you can see the rust. But then the chickens, our heroes, are these very, frankly, very cartoony constructs that look like clay. And intellectually, you'd never think that would work, I don't think. I think intellectually you'd say, that's crazy, that won't match, you know. But somehow it works, you know, supremely well, and you really believe the plasticine chickens in the real world. And that, again, that's just experience has proved that.
As we were describing, you work in these miniature sets for your animations. What does it do to your sense of size and proportion to spend your time in this teeny tiny miniature world?
Well, our sense of proportion went right out the window a long time ago. Otherwise, we'd be in some sensible occupation, I'm sure. I don't know. It's a very strange thing. For example, our chickens are 10 inches high, our model chickens, which is getting on for perhaps slightly more than half the size of a real chicken. So, relatively speaking, these are quite a big scale, because we're working to a half-scale thing. So, imagine a chicken 10 inches high. Imagine a human comes into shot. The human ought to be, by that reckoning, about 3.5 feet high. And it's virtually impossible, and certainly agonizingly horrible, to work with an animated puppet 3.5 feet high, because animation ought to be hands-on and light and instinctive. And if the puppet's that high, you end up struggling with this massive engineering beast. It's really hard to bend. So we didn't do that. We made humans that were only 12 or 14 inches high, and miniature chickens, extra small chickens to go with the humans. So we ended up on two scales, which was one of the many things we stupidly didn't see coming when we stupidly decided to make a film about chickens, which we regard as our first mistake.
No, I have a confession to make. After seeing your movie and empathizing with these poor chickens, I ate a chicken dinner. Did I do the wrong thing?
Boy, what kind of movie is this? Obviously, it had no effect at all.
Did you find yourself shying away from eating chicken while you were making this?
No, actually, no. Rather the opposite. Our appetites were increased very healthily.
We were vegetarians before.
Yeah. No, it is odd. No, I mean, Nick and I don't, personally, don't. We were on a plane yesterday. We both ordered the chicken. You know, we don't feed it at all, I have to say. But I thought maybe we were desensitized, whereas you, as a fresh viewer, might have the decency to hold off for a day at least.
I guess not. I guess the movie just wasn't powerful enough.
No.
Or I'm just too insensitive. Well, Nick Park, I have a question for you. Now, the new movie, Chicken Run. Chicken Run has a chicken pot pie machine, this insidious machine that the two mean-spirited humans have to bake these chickens into pot pies. And it's a bizarre contraption designed to take a whole chicken and mix it in with the chopped up peas and carrots and dough and spit them out the other end as a pot pie. And our hero and heroine have to escape their pot pie fate and get out of one of these machines. Now, Nick Park, most of your animations have bizarre contraptions of one sort or another in them. In fact, before I ask you the actual question, why don't you describe a couple of contraptions from your Wallace and Gromit movies?
Right. What from? You mean a close shave?
Sure.
There's the wrong trousers, which are ex-NASA, in fact, that are actually bought from an ex-NASA store in Wallace's neighborhood. And Wallace uses them to they're covered in rivets. They're very round and robust and have a sort of 1940s feel. And I guess same too with the Knit-O-Matic machine in A Close Shave. That's all covered in copper sheeting and rivets and that kind of thing. And lots of arms and lots of Jules Verne, H.G. Wells, and Victorian technology. I like to describe it as.
Yeah, and like the Knit-O-Matic, you put a whole sheep in one end of the machine and out comes yarn, and by the end of the machine, I think a little sweater is coming out. These bizarre contraptions. Now, your father was an inventor. Did he make contraptions?
Well, he wasn't. I don't think I would describe him as an inventor, but he did make a lot of things. He spent his time in the shed making things.
What kinds of things?
Well, a lot of household things, just shelves, that kind of thing.
Did he make a caravan?
Oh, that's right, yes. That's what made, after making the first Wallace and Gromit film, A Grand Day Out, I realised one day, he's so much like Wallace, because I recalled this childhood experience where my father built a trailer, from scratch. It was like just a room on wheels, like a living room on wheels, and with beds inside, and made everything, and wallpapered it with furniture, and it had furniture and chairs and all that kind of thing. And the whole family, seven of us, went on holiday in this caravan.
Were you taken to any unusual factories when you were a kid?
Oh yeah, boy! I had this terrible experience of going to a chicken slaughterhouse. when I was a kid. Well, I was actually a student at the time. I was doing a summer job, and I was working at a chicken packing factory, folding up plucked chickens and putting them onto trays and feeding them into this great big machine that wrapped them for the supermarket. And actually, one day I was sent down to the slaughterhouse because they were short of labour there, and saw some pretty horrific things there. And some of those ideas from both those experiences have actually come through and been used in Chicken Run.
Your characters of Wallace and Gromit, which are so popular now, tell us if you kind of patterned them on anyone you knew, either in real life or in the movies. And I should say Wallace is a man who's a British man who's very stuffy and proper sounding, but in reality he's really not very bright. Gromit is his dog, and the dog is the smart one who reads books like The Republic by Pluto. So who's behind these characters?
Boy, I don't think I ever really consciously based them on anybody particularly. Wallace, perhaps, you know, when I think about it, you know, for reasons that I've given, he is very close to my dad, who, was very, he was like an inventor and made things. But I think it's his attitude, actually, the way he'll just get ideas and go about doing them without thinking. And he'll be, my dad isn't insensitive, but Wallace is very insensitive another influence, actually, he's very much like an old music hall character that's very much known in Britain, in the north, comes from the north of England, who plays a banjo, ukulele, and called George Formby. But again, it wasn't very conscious, you know, to base him. He isn't based on him, but I think these influences have found themselves in Wallace.
Did you have pets as a kid? Did you have a dog?
I never ever had a dog. Funny you should say that, though. We had a pet chicken.
Did you really?
It was our family dog.
Why did you have a pet chicken?
It was my sister's, actually. It was called Penny, this great big Rhode Island Red. And we just had it for the eggs, really. But it used to come in the porch, and we used to throw sticks for it and things like that. Never went and fetched them, but it was very much a pet, and we saw, my sister and I saw such character in that chicken, and we used to write short stories about this chicken, and one or two ideas have actually found themselves in Chicken Run, like Rocky being known as the Lone Free Ranger. That was a joke we had as a kid.
Oh, really? That's funny.
Yeah, but we never had a dog.
Huh. Did you always want to make cartoons when you were young? Did you see those old cartoons and thought, I want to do that too?
Yeah, I just watched everything and took it all in. I had no idea how they were made, and so they always had an intrigue and a mystery to me. And I remember actually seeing a documentary about Walt Disney and how the whole thing started, with this little drawing of a mouse. And I used to doodle characters in my books at school and stuff, and I used to secretly dream that one day my characters would be known on the screen. In fact, I remember the first time I met Pete was at a film festival. And Pete has actually created this character called Morph, who's very big in Britain. He's like the British equivalent of Gumby. And he metamorphosizes into different things. And when I first met Pete, he had a badge on his lapel with Morph on it. And I just thought, how cool is that, having a badge that you can buy in the shops of your own character? I thought, wow.
Right, yeah, it's like something in your mind becoming a reality, this totally imaginary thing becoming a reality for so many people. At the end of Wallace and Gromit films, at least at the end of a couple of them, Wallace always yearns for some cheese. Mm-hmm. So why don't we end our interview with finding out about cheese? Why why does Wallace want cheese?
Well, how do ideas come about? I think the single reason there's cheese, because it all starts when Wallace and Gromit go to the moon to find cheese, and I was trying to think of a reason why they would go to the moon. And then, you know, we record the voices first, and I recorded with Peter Salis, the actor who plays Wallace. It's just the way he said, "Cheese, Gromit," and that made such a nice mouth shape for Wallace. It was such a nice thing to have him get his chops around, that cheese stuck, and it appeared in all the other movies. In fact, there's a very short little story that there's a factory in the north of England that makes a type of cheese called Wensleydale cheese, And we made Wallace say Wensleydale one in the third film in a close shave. And just by doing that, he'd actually put the cheese factory was on its last legs and about to go into liquidation. And it put the cheese factory back in business.
Are you kidding?
And
that's
yeah,
funny.
The Wensleydale Cheese Factory.
Well, I want to thank you both so much.
Thank you. Great pleasure.
Thank you, Terry. Thank you.
Nick Park and Peter Lord co-directed the animated film Chicken Run, which has just been released on video and DVD. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.